Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org.
Welcome to Assembly Conversations. You're listening to Virginia Public Radio. Last Friday, Governor Bob McDonnell vetoed a redistricting bill, citing districts drawn by the narrow 22-18 Democratic Party majority in the Virginia Senate. Next Monday, April 25th, the legislature is due to come back into session to consider the governor's veto. Joining us for this discussion of Virginia's legislature and its work this year are a trio of state delegates, Democrat Jennifer McClellan of Richmond. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Very good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
Republican Chris Peace of Hanover County. Welcome, Chris. And soon to join us, I believe in Roanoke and studio, will be Delegate Dave Nutter of Montgomery County. I'm your host, Bob Gibson, Executive Director of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership at the University of Virginia. Give us a call at 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611-6397. If you have a question for Delegates McClellan, Peace, and or Nutter. Jen, you are here in Richmond. You have seen your district drawn. What do you expect to happen when the General Assembly meets to consider the redistricting bill that the governor vetoed?
To be honest, your guess, Bob, is as good as mine. The House Privileges and Elections Committee met and reported out pretty much the same House plan with a few changes where they reunited some precincts in neighborhoods that had been split, a couple that were in my district. And I think the Senate is, from what I hear, again, I don't know, this is all hearsay, might be making some tweaks to their map, but will probably pass substantially the same map. And then we'll see what happens. You know, the governor's veto message said that he wanted to see some acceptable changes, and I think there are some discussions happening to figure out what that might be. But who knows?
What would you like to see happen? In the best-case scenario, what would be the best outcome for the General Assembly dealing with its own bill after the governor vetoes it?
Well, I think it's best that the General Assembly draw the maps. I think there will be a little more certainty and predictability than if a court draws the maps. I think, having sat down with the software, it's extraordinarily hard to see more than just a map on a screen and census blocks. And if you just look at it as census blocks and precincts and trying to get the numbers right, you really lose sight of the communities of interest and the neighborhoods and the precincts and trying to keep communities of interest together. And I think the legislature is better able to do that than one judge or three-panel judge, because we live in these communities. We know where these neighborhoods are. So I think it's best that the legislature draw the maps, but we'll see if that happens.
Delegate Jennifer McClellan is my guest on Assembly Conversations. We will be joined shortly by Delegates Chris Peace and or Dave Nutter. Jennifer, earlier Governor McDonnell signed an executive order creating an independent bipartisan advisory commission. The 11-member commission was purely advisory in nature, held meetings open across the state. Nothing happened with its results, it seems. This winter, the House of Delegates again killed a bill to create a permanent bipartisan redistricting commission. What would you like to see happen with redistricting in the long run?
I think a bipartisan panel is a good idea. The biggest problem I see with the process the way that it is now is how fast it happens. And that is, you know, Virginia has odd year elections, and so we're the first state to have elections with the new districts. But when you look at when we get the census data and how little time there is to draw these maps, quite frankly, I don't think there was time to look at what the commission did. Their report came out pretty close to when the legislative maps were drawn. I think probably only one or two people had time to really look at them and digest them. And if we had more time to digest the census data, we'd have a much better process. Now, that would require that we have new districts drawn in the off season. And we'd have to change the Constitution to do that. But that might be the way to go.
Delegate Jennifer McClellan, what will this session overall be remembered for?
That's redistricting. Because I think it dominated, even before we went into special session, it was on everybody's minds. And I think it will also be remembered, this was the first year in anyone's memory where a budget was passed unanimously by both houses. And I think it shows that we can come together and find common ground to do the people's business when we need to.
Delegate Chris Peace, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob. Jennifer, good to talk with you guys.
You too.
Good to have you on. Let me ask the same first question I just asked of Jennifer. What do you expect to happen Monday on redistricting when the General Assembly gets back together in session? And what would you like to see happen Monday?
I'm not sure if I should just say ditto to what Jennifer said, because I couldn't hear her answer. So, what I hope to happen is that the House continue to move forward with its plans that received broad bipartisan support and with which most people find little to no fault. Certainly the ball is squarely in the Senate's court, and I believe that both sides of the aisle need to come together on the Senate side to produce a plan that everyone can live with. And I know for not necessarily speaking for Jennifer, but we're both working professionals and new parents and, have a year ahead of us. We'd all like to see the session close, finish the people's business, and get back to work.
Delegate Dave Nutter of Montgomery County, welcome to the program.
Welcome, Bob.
Glad you could join us.
Thank you.
Let me ask the same first question of you. What do you think will happen on Monday when the General Assembly gets together in session again to consider redistricting, and what would you like to see happen?
Well, I think I'm a reflective opinion of the two other House members. Hopefully we get back down there on Monday. We can pass out the House plan again. Hopefully the Senate will come together in a way that recognizes that there are some problems with the current Senate plan, and they will work to make some adjustments in that plan that we can quickly move forward with. We are a citizen legislature, and all of us have jobs. I shouldn't say all of us, but the vast majority of us do, and we need to get back to those jobs. We make, a great deal of sacrifice to be down there during the regular session, so these extended sessions really create a lot of havoc for our lives, but for all of us, but for the public. We need to put this to rest and move on. And so I hope we will have a revised bill coming out of the Senate that we can then move on to the governor.
Delegate Dave Nutter is a guest on the program from Montgomery County, as is Delegate Chris Peace from Hanover County and Delegate Jennifer McClellan from here in the city of Richmond, where we are at the studios of Audio Image. Chris Peace, while you're with us, and I know you have to go because you have an event coming shortly, what will this session, aside from redistricting, what will this session be known for?
Well, from my perspective, starting out, I think you need to have a vision and then find what steps that you can appropriately take to meet that vision and make it successful. And from my perspective, the vision was to have a smaller government and enable a stronger economy. And if there's one thing I could highlight is government reform. I think the governor, through the establishment of the Reform Commission, in the past year has laid out a framework where efficient government, a government that works best for the taxpayer, can be achieved. And while there are some modest first steps this session, I think we have a roadmap for the next several sessions under his leadership where we can continue to make government work a little bit better. There were a couple hallmarks within that framework, and one was the creation of an inspector general position to go after fraud, waste, and abuse in state government, something that I know the folks in the various offices had been long looking forward to. I carried a bill to streamline and consolidate several boards and commissions. We have over 360 in the state, and I think the governor and many of us would say that some of them are on probation for now, But we want to make sure we're getting the best bang for the buck across state government. So I would say with the hiring freeze and the bill that would reduce the unfunded mandates on local government, certainly the veto of the PE bill is emblematic of that, that there was over $20 million worth in savings in just government reform. And so this session was successful in terms of making government work a little bit better. And I think Jennifer also complimented that position by referring to the unanimous approval of the budget amendments to the two-year spending plan. It was bipartisan nature, and all of us agreed that it was a sound fiscal roadmap for Virginia.
Delegate Chris Peace, the Inspector General position being created, does that take any duties from the Attorney General?
What we're doing is we're streamlining and bringing together several of the other positions and enhancing the authority for them to go and identify places where we're wasting money or there's fraud or other abuses taking place. So this would all be in conjunction with the authorities that are in that office.
What was your favorite bill this year?
I might refer to one that got a little humor, which was the passage of the state, I think, sport fish as rockfish, and there's a little bit of back and forth between that and Menhaden, which brings in many other issues. But of the bills that I carried, I was very pleased with the bill that creates the opportunity for local governments to work more collaboratively, somewhat of a Dillon Rule reform for mutual aid, which was a priority of the Richmond Regional Planning District Commission. Jennifer McClellan was a co-patron and the other representatives of the Richmond region, so that resources can be shared across county and jurisdictional boundaries with simple memorandums of agreement rather than the current code, which asks people to declare a state of emergency, which is, just doesn't make common sense. And when there are limited resources available and the state's cutting back and local governments have less available to provide certain services to the public, it just makes sense that we allow them that flexibility.
Chris Peace, one more question and I'll let you go. Are you planning to run for re-election this year? And if you do, how much is it going to cost to campaign?
Well, it all depends if I have an opponent. but the first campaign I ran was a special session, a two-week race. And I believe between the two of us, we raised and spent close to $600,000. And that was in 2006. So with 10% inflation, who knows what those dollars would reflect.
And a longer campaign.
Excuse me?
And a longer campaign.
In a longer campaign. So the district that is laid out in the plan that the House passed a couple weeks ago and then was repassed in the Privileges and Elections Committee this week shows the 97th District consolidating a bit around just Hanover, King William, and New Kent. So the service area is more compact and contiguous. So that helps, but you know, regardless of whether I have an opponent or not, we never take you for granted, and I enjoy serving the public and providing good constituent service, and so I do intend to seek re-election.
Thank you, Republican Delegate Chris Peace of Hanover County, and we'll let you go. Thank you for joining the program.
Thank you, Bob. Good to see you all or talk to you, Dave, and Jennifer, look forward to being with you again.
Bye, Chris.
Bye-bye, Chris.
You're listening to Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. My two remaining guests are Richmond Democratic Delegate Jennifer McClellan and Dave Nutter, who is a Republican from Montgomery County, who joins us from the studios of WVTF in Roanoke. Dave, same question. Are you running for re-election? And if you are, what kind of campaign cost do you see associated with that race?
Well, yes, I am running for re-election, and you know, as Chris said, it will depend on you know, if you have an opponent or not. But you know, my races in the past, I think one of the benefits out here, you know, is that it's real important to get out and meet people and go door to door. So I haven't spent more than about $200,000 campaigning in years past and each election because we just do a lot of door knocking. Unfortunately, mailing and other things do cost, but but out here, you know, if you just send out mailings or run TV spots and do not go door to door, you're going to be in trouble. People want to see you; they expect that. I credit that with my first win in 2001, and I've kept it up. And it's very important to stay in touch with people, too. And that's the thing I enjoy. It's so amazing that, you know, you can meet people or you can remember the time you talked to them in their driveway and about an issue, and then you'll run into 2 years later, and, you know, and that made a big impression on them, and you remember the time you spent with them. So it's very much about how we campaign out here.
Dave Nutter, delegate from Christiansburg, I take it, in Montgomery
yes.
County?
Right.
Yes. And has a new district, as does everybody, and a new nomination schedule. Your nomination now, if the redistricting goes according to schedule, and we don't know whether that's going to happen or not, is going to be by August 23rd. Does that change anything for the way candidates approach getting into races this year? I assume you can get in as late as June or July.
Yeah, I'm not sure the exact deadline, the filing deadline when someone can file. If you, of course, it depends on the method of nomination. Virginia law, as you know, Bob, allows incumbent members of the General Assembly to select their own method of nomination. It's not set by the party. I've often filed for a primary. It's just kind of a little cleaner, and since no one files after a certain time, you're already the nominee, so it moves the process along. But you still have you still have the same cycle. You got the summer months when you're trying to get out and do some door to door. Not many people are paying attention to elections at that stage, and then of course you've got to put yourself in a position to be ready when September gets there and kids are back in school and people are starting to focus in that, you know, oh, yes, there's an election coming up. So that's all part of it. So it pushes back a little bit, but, that happened in 2001, and we'll just deal with it and move on.
Jennifer McClellan, are you looking at running for re-election, and how much do you think it's going to cost, and is your nomination procedure any different this year?
I am planning to run for re-election, and plan to have a primary if, you know, I have an opponent. I think the deadline for candidates to file if they are interested in being in the primary is June 15th. So
June 15th for the August 23rd primary.
That's right. So I'll find out then if I'll have a primary opponent. I don't expect my campaign to be that expensive. I think when I first got elected, I spent about $100,000. And David is right. It's in my district. It's mostly going door to door. Now, I have the benefit that Chris and David don't have, is I can get from one side of the district to the other in about 15 minutes. And that's not going to change under the map. So probably whatever map gets adopted, that's not going to change for me. My district saw there's been quite a bit of growth in the downtown Richmond area, sort of around VCU. So, you know, in urban areas, you hit a dorm, you hit an apartment building, you hit a lot of voters. You know, you go to neighborhood associations. You do a lot of retail politics, and that doesn't cost a whole lot of money. Don't need to do TV. Radio's nice, but probably not kind of expensive, but not as expensive as TV, obviously. So I'm looking forward to getting out and meeting with folks again. And I've had a lot happen since the last time I talked to him.
And you have a little boy.
I have an 8-month-old, and I think people are eager to see him. So I'm looking forward to the campaign.
So he'll be campaigning too?
He'll be coming with me. I don't know how much campaigning he'll do himself.
No, Bob, I have to interject here that this is sure. going to give Jennifer an unfair advantage because her son is beautiful.
This is true. Delegates Jennifer McClellan and Dave Nutter are my guests on Assembly Conversations. Give us a call if you have a question for either delegate about this year's session of the General Assembly. Our line is open at 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611-6397. Dave Nutter, do you have a favorite bill that you got through this year in the General Assembly, and do you have one that is as interesting as Menhaden or Rockfish?
Well, not quite as interesting as Menhaden. Probably one of the bills that I was most happy to see get passed this year was the establishment of a guaranteed research fund for to support academic research and technology transfer. You know, this is actually was a bill carried by Scott Ligenfelter, but I've carried a bill like that for several years, and so I put my bill in this year because one of the things that began to emerge as the governor's bill began to take shape was how the process was going to work. You know, it's one thing to say, you know, we're going to have a we're going to put some funds out there and support academic research and the commercialization of new technologies. It was a process, and so it was something I had adopted where you have some external advisory boards to that, and so that my bill was put as part was adopted into Delegate Ligenfelter's bill, which became a lot of the structure for that. So I was glad to see that happen. It's something I've pushed for 5 or 6 years. One year I actually had had the bill out of the House, had $1 million in the House budget for it, and the Senate ran into it, and, well, it didn't come out of the Senate committee. So I was glad to see that long process finally come to fruition.
Do you think that Virginia deserves a different form of legislative redistricting?
It is a – you know, Bob, I am not – I've always felt like there's a need for some more – you know, a bipartisan model than the way we do. I've always said that. You know, it's often a time crunch. I don't know whether we would have to come do it at a different year until you have the numbers, because we're the first one out of the box. You know, we just got the data in February. So drawing lines as quickly and for the thing, it creates some unique problems. And, you know, but also I'd like to say to people, it is also where two issues. One is that in whoever you pick, there's inherently a political process involved, even the selection of an external group or by the legislative bodies themselves. But I'd also like to put something on the table too, Bob, in that, you know, I know we focus a lot about the internal politics of redistricting, the who shot John game. But what we need to also understand, particularly from my perspective of the world in Western Virginia, is how the face of Virginia politics is changing.
Sure.
That, you know, we're increasingly going to look like New York in some ways. And I don't mean that in from policy, but there's going to be one giant political entity, you know, where the bulk of legislators are, and then there's everybody else.
Well, you know, one million of Virginia's 8 million residents reside in Fairfax County.
Exactly. And, you know, and for those of us in the rural areas of Virginia, you know, the policy implications of that are much more important than, you know, the horse race game that journalists often follow. Because there are profound implications of what that means for how we're going to fund public education, how we're going to fund transportation, how we're going to fund higher education. And so that's the thing I think people need to start looking at and what it means, more so than, you know, we get wrapped around the axle a little bit on, you know, the political process.
Very true. Delegate Dave Nutter and Delegate Jennifer McClellan are my guests on Assembly Conversations. Let's go to our callers. Our first caller is Sandra in Penlaird. Welcome to Assembly Conversations. You're on with the two delegates.
Thank you. I would like to know, I just heard the gentleman make a statement that we have to think about how we're going to fund different agencies and organizations, but VDOT was one that you particularly mentioned by naming it transportation. In fact, it's my perception that VDOT is the Virginia Department of Transportation, when really it should be the Virginia Department of Highways. I would like to know why highways, which are an intensely oil-needy project, get so much money, and transportation publicly, buses, trains, carpooling gets virtually no attention. I live in the western part of Virginia, the rural community that you speak of, near Harrisonburg, which has an enormously mobile population, students and a sophisticated community that does a lot of traveling, totally dependent on cars. No buses, no trains, no nothing except a car. If you want to get in and out of here, you use an automobile. I keep hearing VDOT cry poor mouth. I live on a dirt road that goes nowhere. It is a loop road. I mean, it's a cul-de-sac road. It services virtually no families. And VDOT is going to pave this road. I have no idea where all this money comes from. I just crossed the mountain on Route 33 today, and there's an enormous pavement project going on between the top of the mountain and Stannardsville. I went to Roanoke today. There is more VDOT activity, and there is just endless VDOT activity here in the Harrisonburg area in terms of Stone Spring Road, the Loop Road, which
Sandra,
VDOT has never given up on. It's like Walmart, no matter how you...
Sandra, let's give Delegate Dave Nutter a chance to respond about your question in the Virginia Department of Highways.
Sure. Thank you. Well, I didn't mention the part about transportation, but, you know, VDOT does have a variety of fronts beyond just highways, believe it or not. They do have statutory authority over a lot of different things from, you know, how we do bike trails. We do have the Department of Rail under the Virginia Department of Transportation. We do have a special fund to support rail, not near as much as a lot of people would like to see, particularly in the western part of the state. But yes, I mean, highways are our primary source of revenue and our primary source of transportation modes, and funding has gone there. You know, but I think to address a couple things, you know, a couple things we did try to do back in 2007 was to start, you know, working with localities so roads just didn't go into the state system. We tried to bring more structure to the planning process of highways. And, of course, some of the governor's audit this year, or this past year, rather, I should say, was designed to improve the process inside VDOT by which projects are managed, to bring more efficiency at all levels. But the fact is, I think, you know, obviously the caller seems to be a strong supporter of alternative transportation modes, but, you know, our highways are our primary vehicles by which we do that. I think we all recognize in some areas we'd like to see more urban transit. There's not a lot of state money for that. Most of that is federal money we use. But the needs are so great on the highway side. I think the resources and time are on that, and that's where the focus is. As far as the choices in your county, you know, those priority areas are set by your county boards of supervisors and your city councils, and more so than the state. And so you might want to get up with your county government as well.
Jennifer McClellan, do you want to respond to Sandra's concern?
Sure. Thank you, Sandra, for the question. Let me come at it a little different from more the urban perspective. I think she's exactly right that the conversation about transportation has been dominated by roads and highways.
We have got to take a break. You're listening to Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. We'll be right back after this short break.
Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, supporting public discourse through sponsorship of Virginia Public Radio. Resources for parents and teachers online at veanea.org. More information about Assembly Conversations and other Virginia Public Radio programming can be found online at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.
Welcome back to Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. I'm your host, Bob Gibson, Executive Director of the Sorenson Institute for Political Leadership at the University of Virginia. Give us a call at 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611-6397. If you have a question for my guests this evening, Delegate Jennifer McClellan and Delegate Dave Nutter. Jen McClellan is a Richmond Democrat. Dave Nutter is a Montgomery County Republican. And, Jen, you were responding to Sandra and Penn Laird about transportation.
That's right. You know, my biggest frustration with the transportation debate has been that it's been dominated by road projects, highway projects in Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads. And that's why you'll see I've voted against every transportation bill that we've had, because they don't address some of the critical needs we have in Central Virginia, and that is high-speed rail, mass transit. I have constituents who don't drive. They're trying to figure out how to get to work. They're trying to figure out how to get their kids to school. I met a woman the other day complaining about, you know, Richmond City Schools has an open enrollment policy where you can enroll your kids in pretty much any school in the city. And she's gone through that process, and yet she feels it's a sham because she can't get her child to the school of her choice because the transit system doesn't allow her to do that. And, you know, America in general lags behind the rest of the world in mass transit, whether it's rail or buses or metro or what have you. And, you know, federal funding has been cut for rail and mass transit. And I think until we change fundamentally how we view transportation, all we will continue to do is build highways, and you'll never have enough to deal with all the transportation needs that we have. But if we can get cars off the road, get trucks off the road, get cargo off the road, we can move people a lot more efficiently than we've been doing.
Thank you, Jennifer McClellan. Thank you, Sandra, for your call from Penn Laird outside Harrisonburg. Our next caller is Glenna in Martinsville. Glenna, welcome to Assembly Conversations. You're on with Delegates Jennifer McClellan and Dave Netter.
Thank you. There was a bill this session that will clarify illegal gambling concerning activity at Internet cafes. Was that bill signed into law?
Yes, it was.
Yes. Did you like that bill, Glenna?
Yes. Yes, that's one of the concerns in my community. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your call. Our next caller is David in Winchester. David, welcome to Assembly Conversations. You're on with Jen McClellan and Dave Netter.
Hello. Mike's concern is the influx of illegal aliens into the Virginia, especially the Northern Virginia area. I was wondering if any efforts being made to stop the employment of these people through the Department of Labor.
There were about 30 bills dealing with at least 30 dealing with illegal immigration. Dave, do you remember what passed?
Yeah, I think in that regard. I'm trying to remember. There were so many. I think it did. I think one of the bills we sent over was trying to look at require that if you're working on a state project, you're doing contracting under the state, that you would have to check the immigration status of employees. We passed a similar bill for state employees the year before. It was broader for everybody, for companies who worked for the state, you know, had contracts with the state as well as state agencies. That was amended, and it was only limited down to the state agencies. Then the legislation this year was to expand it for those who had contracts with the state. And I think that did pass. I don't know, Jennifer, if you remember.
I think that's right, that they use the E-Verify system to verify the legal status of employees.
Right.
Do you have any observations, Dave Netter, on the illegal immigration bills in general, and any that should have passed and didn't, or passed that shouldn't have?
Well, you know, over the years, Bob, as you know, and this is one where I know Jennifer and I may disagree a little bit. We've had a number of bills over the year, going back when for Governor Warner, looking at illegal aliens at our colleges, applying for in-state status for at our colleges. We've had a number of bills like that over the years. Oftentimes they pass the House, and I probably almost every case have voted for them. But they've run into a problem in the Senate. I mean, they've just not come out of the Senate. That's why the bill mentioned earlier about using the E-Verify system was one that we were excited got through and thought it was a positive step because, again, taxpayers are funding these government contracts, and we should at least make, if taxpayers' money is being used, then the companies would certify that they're not, or guarantee as best they can, that they're not using illegal aliens on these projects. So it's a step in the right direction. It's one, again, until the federal government comes up with a comprehensive way to deal with this, we're still going to see. And certainly in the rural parts of Virginia, we're seeing a lot of immigrants to the area. I can't say whether they're illegal or not. I just know we're seeing a lot more immigrants from particularly South and Central America in the area as well. And so, but there's also, you know, it's a fine line we all walk between recognizing the important contribution that immigrants to this have made to this country, continue to make. We want to welcome people who want to come to the United States legally and follow the process. But at the same time, we want to do it in a way that also doesn't reward people who break our laws and come to the Commonwealth, the United States of America, in violation of U.S. law.
Delegate Jennifer McClellan, do you have any qualms or problems with the legislation this year on illegal immigration?
Sure. I think one area where David and I can't agree is the federal government really needs to step in and get its arms around this problem and work to have comprehensive immigration reform. Absent that, the problem with leaving it to the states to do it is a lot of times we have unintended consequences, and the bills have been so broad that they cause more problems than they solve. I sit on the Education Committee and the Commerce and Labor Committee, and every year we have a series of bills in both areas. And when you are trying to shift, anytime you have a bill, you have to ask who pays for it. And a lot of these bills shift the cost of policing immigration from the federal government to small business owners who are not in a position to check the status beyond what the government says it is, or universities, or punish the children. There are a lot of education bills. You know, there are a lot of kids whose parents made a decision to bring them here when they were babies or little. They've lived their entire life here. They don't speak their native language. They don't know anything about their native country. Many of them have worked and paid taxes. And yet we would have bills that would basically say, because your parent made the decision to break the law and you had no choice about it, we're going to punish you. And I think that's a little harsh. There has to be a better way to address the problem than doing that. And a lot of these bills, which come up more often in election years than not, tend to be so broad that they cause more problems than they solve.
Delegates Jennifer McClellan and Dave Nutter are my guests on Assembly Conversations. If you have a question for Jen or for Dave, give us a call at 866-611-NEWS. That is 866-611-6397. Dave Nutter, what are the chances that ABC store privatization will come up at any time in the next few years, and why didn't it even come up for a vote this year?
Well, I think the chances of it coming up anytime soon is probably very slim. I mean, clearly, I think the reaction from, I think, all sides and many people felt like this plan wouldn't work. A lot of people said, what's broke? You know, why our current system? Bob, I think this is a classic case. And since, you know, we've got a lot of universities in the listening area here, and maybe a great academic study of how a public policy, I don't think had a real home. You know, at one level, the governor said the state should not be in the ABC business. And I think most of us have said if we were starting a program today, we would not do it that way. But it's there, and it works well. We've been served, you know, I mean, we've not suffered some of the problems I think some states have who have, commercial alcohol sales. It also pitted for many members of the General Assembly concerns about, you know, Sunday sales of alcohol, all these different things, ads constantly on the TV and the radio about buying booze, who are very anti-expansion of ABC sales. So all those things are, you know, I think came together. It just didn't have a natural home. And so I'll be shocked if the governor brings it back again. And I think other governors have talked about it in the past and didn't go very far. And I'm sure after the experience of Governor McDonald, there will probably be quite a few governors in the future before it ever surfaces again.
Jen McClellan, do you agree?
I do agree. And I would just add, again, from the urban perspective, there were a lot of neighborhoods and communities that have problems with the ABC stores in their neighborhoods now. But they have a place to go to get those problems addressed through the government. And they were concerned that if you privatize these businesses and their primary goal would be profit and not the sort of public safety and the public impact they have on the community, then they really wouldn't have anywhere to go to solve some of the problems that the stores cause in the communities.
Jennifer McClellan, one part of state government that isn't going anywhere and isn't going away is the prison business. When inmates leave prison in Virginia, and there are now more than 38,000 there, most of whom will return to towns and cities and counties in Virginia, the biggest problem they face is the inability to find work. Mm-hmm. Some sociologists would say that pushes them back into a life of crime. What is being done, and what is being done this year in particular, to address that problem of recidivism?
The governor has, to his credit, focused on trying to work on sort of a path back to society, and focus on when someone is released from prison, you don't just open the door and say, okay, good luck, but giving them some of the tools they need to reenter society. One of the areas, though, we need to address that I don't think we are addressing is dealing with substance abuse, because many of the people who are in prison, I know the Richmond City Sheriff says this all the time, they are there because they have addiction problems that never get solved. And until those underlying problems are solved, they are going to be right back there. But the problem in Virginia is once you slap someone with the word felon, it ruins their life. They can't get, as simple as getting the right to vote, getting a job, no one wants to give them a second chance. And so part of it is, I think, educating the business community to give these people a second chance. And that doesn't have to just be the government. There are organizations like Boaz and Ruth here in Richmond who are taking those steps to educate the community and say, look, providing job training programs for people who are coming out of prison, and then turning around and taking them to the business community to meet them and say, look, this is a person. This is not just a prisoner, a former prisoner. This is a person who's paid his debt to society, who now has these skills and needs a job. You need to be willing to take a chance on them. And I think a lot of businesses are starting to come around and do that.
Dave Nutter, would you agree with any or all of that?
No, I think it is an issue, and I'm glad to see the governor address this. I know in my own visits I'm not an attorney, so I don't interact a lot or have previous professional experience of interacting with the criminal justice system, but in meeting with their community service boards people and things like that, and, you know, we talk about some of these issues. You know, it is, as Jennifer said, if you have a felony conviction, I mean, not only do you lose the right to vote, you can't hold a professional license, you can't be a real estate agent. You know, you can't be bonded. You know, you'll never, you know, so even if you have, you know, the education, you cannot, you know, reenter that field you were in oftentimes in many cases. So it's a real problem. But I also want to pick up on something she mentioned, that is the problem of substance abuse. I'm on the health committee in the General Assembly. I've been on a study committee looking at substance abuse issues in Virginia. And it's something I've carried several bills this session and last session on substance abuse. It is a profound problem. You know, a lot of people today are sitting at home or in their cars and listening to this. They need to understand today that the problem of substance abuse throughout Virginia, but particularly in rural areas, but it's all over too, so I don't want to minimize it, is, I think, eroding the economic competitiveness of the Commonwealth. You know, in my part of the state, I meet people in industry all the time who says they have a hard time finding qualified people who can pass drug tests. You know, I've appeared before the Governor's Commission on Manufacturing. You know, a number of them are raising that up, and that's several years ago. So it's a serious problem. Governor McDonald has recognized this, as Secretary of Health as well, and they're moving forward to start looking at this and looking at ways to how we're going to deal with this. But it is a big problem, and it's one that has an economic consequences. And if, you know, we have to start looking at that, how, you know, as an economic problem affecting the workforce viability of the Commonwealth versus just solely it's a criminal problem. And fortunately, Secretary Hazel and Governor McDonald seem to grasp that implications of that and are working on some projects now, I think, to help come to terms with that a little bit better. But it's going to take time.
Delegates David Nutter of Montgomery County and Jennifer McClellan of Richmond are my guests on Assembly Conversations. Give us a call on Virginia Public Radio at 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611-6397 if you have a question for either Republican Delegate Dave Nutter or Democratic Delegate Jennifer McClellan. Dave, is merit pay for teachers a good thing, as the governor put it out today?
Oh, I didn't know he did anything today, so it's news to me. You know, I think the merit pay has value, but like everything, it depends on how it's done. So I hadn't heard he put forward anything today, so I'll be curious to hear about it. But, you know,
there's some money in a pot that basically they outlined how it might be spent in a number of school districts around the state to serve neediest schools with certain requirements being met to give bonuses of up to $5,000 to individual teachers if they are meeting certain situations.
Okay.
And that's the nature of it.
Okay. Yeah, I heard about that. And since Jen's on the Education Committee, I'll defer to her. But I thought it was more designed to get people into schools that are hard to attract teachers into.
I think that's the general idea to attract teachers into those schools.
Right.
Is that right, Jen?
I think so. And I haven't seen the governor's details, but I think anything that we can do to reward our teachers and to attract and retain the best and the brightest is a good thing. Like anything, I think the devil will be in the details, and I think we need to be sure that we are going to do it in a way that won't unfairly punish other teachers. Again, not having looked at his details, but my concern in general with when you base pay or how much money a school system makes based on certain benchmarks that they meet is oftentimes those benchmarks don't fully reflect the realities of a school system. If you have a school system, again, like Richmond, that has a disproportionate number of at-risk students, they may not. If they're underperforming, it's not necessarily because of the teachers. And so as long as whatever merit pay system accounts for that, it should be okay. But I think anytime you set up objective benchmarks and then base either salaries or funding to the school division simply on do you meet these criteria or not, you run the risk of missing what's really going on in those school divisions.
Dave Nutter, is civility faring any better or any worse in Virginia's General Assembly today compared to the previous decade you've been there? And how do we stack up? Are we as bad as Congress?
I hope we're not as bad as Congress. And I really don't think we are. I think one of the good things about our system that's so different from Congress is that we all have outside jobs, and work. The citizen legislature, I think, is very much, helps us in Virginia to keep civility at a better level. Also, the fact that we're, things don't drag out forever. In the General Assembly, we're there for a very short period of time. This past year, we're there for 45 days. That forces decisions, and I think it, good or bad, and then you move on to the next one because you really don't have time to, if somebody spoke against your bill or killed your bill, to get too mad about it because you got five other things to worry about. But actually, I think in many ways this session was giving the politics surrounding this session of the budget and then, of course, redistricting. I thought it was I still think it's a very, the civility is still alive and well. There's a lot of good things that go on off the floor with members reach out to each other have friendships beyond that. I think that's very much part of how we work in the General Assembly. And I would hate to be like Congress. Thank you.
Jen McClellan, how do you see civility faring in the General Assembly, and how much different are we than Congress here?
I agree with David that we are a lot more civil than Congress, and I think on a personal level, we for the most part get along with each other. When Jack was born, I got more congratulatory cards from Republicans than I did from Democrats. But I think from what I hear from talking to folks that have been there a little longer than I have, part of what is missing now is we don't socialize the way members used to. And as a result, we're not as civil as members used to be. I used to sit next to Riley Ingram on the House floor, and he would kind of bemoan that it's just not quite the same, because you could get up, you know, Dick Cranwell could get up and give a very fiery partisan speech, and then he and Vance Wilkins could go out and, you know, grab a drink and say, you know, well, we disagreed, but at the end of the day, we're still friends, and we all know we want what's best for Virginia. We've lost that. A lot of that is just because of the crushing amount of work we have to do in a small amount of time. But the fact that we are a citizen legislature and we have to go back and answer for our actions keeps us grounded in a way that Congress is not. And so, and, you know, Virginia is still considered a kind of genteel place. And I think we could not get away with some of the antics that they do in other states or in Congress. You know, somebody asked me, you know, in other states where an entire caucus will leave the state out of protest, it's like, you know, if that happened in Virginia, we'd all be thrown out.
Hey, Bob, can I jump into something, you know, because, what Jennifer said is true, is about the pace, and that is, you know, today we have subcommittees start meeting at, you know, at 7 or 7:30 in the morning. This past session, I was chairing two subcommittees starting at 5:30. I was on two other subcommittees at 5:30. So from Monday through Thursday night, I was in subcommittee from 5:30 to often 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. By then, you're exhausted, and all you want to do is go home. And so, yeah, the time for that, I know a lot of people think we're down there at a lot of receptions at night, and today anymore, I don't really have much time for any of that kind of stuff. You know, if people are from my district are there, I always try to make time. But a lot of times, even then, I'm late. And so, as Jennifer said, the pace is something that I think is really has cut in on that. But then there's those moments we have on the floor, whether when Jennifer's bringing her son in, or, you know, other members are doing something personal to highlight. There's a lot of camaraderie there, and that I think that gets missed. And sometimes it's just seen as kind of antics, but sometimes it's just a way we let off a little steam and express, you know, some appreciation and humor with each other. And
cat noises, dog noises on the front house
little
floor.
Things like that.
I hear those. Let's get back to our callers. Our next caller is Paul in Callaway. Paul, welcome to Assembly Conversations. You're on with Jennifer McClellan and Dave Nutter.
Hey, thank you. Really enjoying the conversation here. And Jennifer, you had made a statement a while ago, and it's a partial quote. They are there because of addiction. And I'd like to hear you talk more about the cause and effect and treatment modality for that, because they are there, I mean, you know, was in reference to incarceration for addiction, is kind of a sad commentary on our society here in Virginia.
Yeah, thank you, Paul, for the question. There are a lot of reasons why people fall into the trap of addiction. And unfortunately, everything about that addiction is criminal. And so whether it's possession or, you know, you steal something so that you can get your next fix, you very rapidly end up in the criminal justice system.
And
I'm sorry, I have not. I don't think I. No, I have not.
All right. The DSM-IV would define someone that smoked as addicted. Yet you categorize it as criminal. I think this is a Stone Age kind of perspective. And what I hope to bring to the conversation is something that moves this problem into something more contemporary. Can you respond to that, Jennifer?
Yeah, I think what I meant to say with my comment is that there are so many criminal laws that criminalize addictive behavior. And I'm not talking about what specifically you're addicted to, but there are so many laws that criminalize addictive behavior that when you have an addict, whatever it is, the underlying addiction is not treated, but if they break a law, that effect is punished. So I didn't mean to say the act itself is criminal. And the addiction is criminal, but our criminal justice system has created so many crimes out of addictive behavior, rather than just treating the underlying problem.
Dave Nutter, you brought up addiction as well. Mm. Would you like to get a response into Paul's question?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I think obviously if people are committing crimes in order to support their addiction, whatever it is, they are going to run afoul of the criminal justice system. And I think most, statistics seem to indicate today probably close to 70% of most people in jails today are there because of some type of addiction problem that got them there in the first place because of their behaviors. You know, one of the things we saw on this commission is, and this goes back to the problem of how are we going to treatment. Over the years today, private insurance programs, if you have that, don't cover that anymore. And the burden has been pushed back increasingly back to government to do. You know, when you deal with addiction, you're never going to have, people a lot of times say, well, you treat them, they'll have recidivism. Well, that's true, but it is a problem, addiction. But you also have to start thinking about addiction in many ways is today a chronic disease. Yeah. And it's not going to go away. Some people manage it, others, some are going to relapse. But even if you make, even if you have a 30% revision rate, you've had a huge impact on the cost to the government and the taxpayers, as well as to the economy, if you can turn that many people around and get them on a path. So I think it does pay, but it's one we're still grappling with in our budgets and how we're going to fund it. But there are a lot of good programs out there that can have an impact.
Dave Nutter and Jennifer McClellan, our time is up for this edition of Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. Thank you for coming on the program.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Bob.
I'm your host, Bob Gibson, of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership at the University of Virginia, saying thanks for joining us.
Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org. And by listeners of this Virginia Public Radio member station. Listeners can hear this program again or access other Virginia Public Radio news content at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.